Welcome to another soul-enriching episode of Meltdown to Mastery. I'm your host, Jane Marchiandi, and today we have a captivating exploration ahead with the esteemed Dr. Bruce Berkowski. Get ready to dive into the realm of spiritual phytoessencing, a profound approach to healing that unveils the transformative power of essential oils on a soul level. In this conversation, we unravel the intricate connection between custom essential oil blends and deep soul healing. Dr. Bruce takes us on a journey emphasizing the importance of reconnecting with our soul essence, shedding light on how stagnation occurs when we get caught purely in our image state. Discover the extraordinary essence of plants and how they can serve as catalysts to guide us back to our soul progression. It's not just fascinating, it's profoundly powerful. These custom oil blends act as mirrors, reflecting the true inner nature of individuals and propelling us back towards the essence of our soul. Join us for an episode that promises not only enlightenment, but a roadmap to soulful progression. Let's unlock the potency of spiritual phytoessencing with Dr. Bruce Berkowski. Welcome to Meltdown to Mastery, empowering women to overcome midlife crisis by rewiring the subconscious mind. Feeling overwhelmed, disillusioned, stuck? We all have. Here we explore inspiration and empowerment to navigate through the tough times and move to a place where hearts soar, minds manifest, and bodies heal. Welcome, Dr. Bruce.
Thank you, Jane.
You know, I want to go into, because you have so much knowledge, we're going to go right into why it's so important to heal in a deep level rather than superficial. Like you say, disease is often a part of our soul learning, and it's so important. Even if we're close to leaving the planet, it can still have huge impact. Your discovery of how essential oils can actually do that, and we're going to get into that, is so groundbreaking, so fascinating. And how I just find it fascinating how Mother Earth provides us with these modalities that can really heal us so deeply. So just start with why it's so important to go deeper than superficial.
Certainly. The first thing that people need to do is they need to understand themselves as an organism, as something beyond the physical and the superficial mental emotionals. So people view their being, their life, as something that's on the physics, purely the physical sphere, and the amount of mentation and emotion that they invest in this physical life. But actually, there are three levels of being, and they're centrifugal. And the outermost is the physical. So the one that we concentrate on most, and that most people focus on in terms of their efforts to get well, is actually the most superficial and the least grounded of the levels. Just interior medial to that is going to be the emotional and physical sphere. And so if you work on that level, then you'll be working somewhat deeper. We should understand that healing is a centrifugal process, and we can refer to the direction of cure as being from the inside to the out, which is something that is completely misunderstood in this era. And I'll discuss that a little bit in just a little bit. Just interior, the deepest level of being, is going to be the soul level. And the soul level, within the soul level, and of course you have to stipulate that you accept that there is an operative soul. If you're atheistic and you don't believe in such a thing and spirit and so forth, then the rest of this conversation is not going to have much relevance to you. But for those of us, and the majority of people do believe that they are ensouled, the model that I go by in terms of the soul is that there is an aspect of your soul or a component of the soul, which we can refer to as the eternal I. And that's the uppercase I. And that is the sort of the nucleus of the atom, so to speak, that moves from one incarnation to the next in a cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. That's the you who you always are through all these incarnations. It carries the DNA of that one drop of divine light that constitutes your individualized soul. But that soul cannot manifest itself in this outer world. It is of spirit, is not of the physical. It is of the infinite, not of the finite realm. So it needs to develop a self-structure. And that self-structure then will move outwards and will be able to engage as a survival type personality in the outer world for you to engage in this material realm. At the precise interface of the soul, the eternal I, and the beginnings of the self-structure, we have what we can refer to as the real self, the true self, your true nature. That part of the self-structure that never loses contact with the who you truly are, what your true being is, what its nature is. But as you move outward, it becomes more distant from the soul, and those outer levels of the soul structure, the me becomes the me as opposed to the I, is designed to be an instrument of the soul and of the real self or the true self that will be able to represent that trueness of you, your true nature in this outer world, and that should be your operating medium. But due to social conditioning and the influences of parents, of teachers, of peer groups, of religious teachers, and so forth, you're told, well, this is good, but that's not so good. You shouldn't be this. You should be that. This is what's ideal rather than it's what is real, using the terminology of Dr. Carl Rogers. And so you develop an ideal self. In other words, what is ideal in the ideas and conceptions of others, as opposed to what your true nature is informing you. And you start to operate from that platform, and very frequently that ideal self becomes semi-autonomous to autonomous, and it becomes who you think you are. You lose complete track of that real self, of the DNA of your true nature. And it's that schism, it's that estrangement from who you are and vis-a-vis who you truly are from spirit that is the beginning of disease on a deeper level. We're not talking about acute diseases like a cold or a flu. We're talking about the type of diseases that we see in human beings, that virtually everybody seems to have some type of illness by the time that they are old. So what happens from that point is you then exacerbate that estrangement and the knowledge that accrues from that connection to spirit, and you go astray in terms of the way you live and the way you eat, what you do in your life. So just to backtrack just real quickly, without going too far off into a tangent, I'm also an old school naturopath. And the old school naturopath, old school naturopathy, had its own philosophy, its own theoretical premise. And the theoretical premise is different than the medical premise that we have now. That's the operative theoretical premise. And that premise was that life, that the health is what is necessary for health on those same conditions that's necessary for life, which is proper food, pure water, pure air, adequate sunshine, adequate exercise, adequate rest and sleep, adequate warmth, proper posture, and emotional poise. Those are the fundamental elements of health and of a good life, of living the good life. And if any of those elements are deficient in your life, you begin to develop disease. Disease is really, in a very basic sense, is nothing more than an estrangement from nature, from the natural world, from the harmonies and the rhythms of the natural world. And this estrangement from soul, from spirit, and this estrangement from the natural world, which is the only aspect of this finite realm that is imbued with the spirit of the higher world. If you walk through a forest, a silent forest at noon in the summer or in the winter, just by yourself or with your dog, you can feel the presence of spirit all around you. You will never feel that walking through the streets of Manhattan. So if you estrange yourself from both nature and from the spirit world, then you're setting yourself on this errant course that leads you into the deep forest of disease. And the only way really to work your way back on a physical level is to reestablish the fundamental elements of health in the proper balance in your life on a physical level. And on the deeper level, to restore your connection back to who you truly are. And if you put those two pieces together, you can then initiate what I call a directional process towards wholeness of being. And it's through that that you establish true health. Anything short of that is simply amelioration of the results of the disease. The effects are the results of the disease, but the disease itself is basically this complex that arises from violations of the laws of health, nature's laws of health, the violations of the laws of nature, and estrangement from your true spiritual inner world. So I hope that sets things up for you there.
No, that's brilliant. And as we get further away from our true nature and live that what you call ideal state, which isn't, it's kind of an artificial layover that we've been programmed to think we are, we become more stuck in a way, like estranged, not sure what life's about, because we're not living our soul purpose or true nature. So you have these blends, these essential oil blends that mirror the image of a person's true inner nature and provides a pathway out or a healing. Can you go into that now?
Certainly. So in the mid-1990s, around 1994, I began developing the art of spiritual phytoessence. Phytoessence is a synonym for essential oil. And prior to that, I began practice in naturopathic practice back in 1978. So I had been around a long time. And I had a high volume type of practice. And it became, and I'm also a homeopath. And so it became apparent to me that basically I was having results on this more outer level. People were feeling better. But as soon as something occurred in their life, something stressful, some type of trauma, a grief, a loss, or stress of some sort, that they would basically forsake whatever they learned, and they would regress, and then you'd have to fix them up all over again. And it became, you began to realize that you weren't really accomplishing what you wanted to accomplish. And so I, you know, began my work in homeopathy, and I was getting closer to that, but I wasn't really satisfied with homeopathy, although I still use homeopathy now, but more in more superficial, more on the physical, emotional interface level, than on to try to really get to the, you know, the absolute core of the case. And the idea in homeopathy is that you're going to find a similimum. You'll find a remedy out of the 3,000 homeopathic remedies that most closely matches who this person is on a very, very deep level. And because of that, you will have this unfolding effect where the whole disease will begin to unravel, and the person will be reestablished in some type of a healthy state. So being a naturopath, first and foremost, that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, because I know that without the lifestyle changes, no matter what you do, you're not really going to have an impact. Even if you had the similimum, the impact will be partial, and how long it would, you know, it would be able to maintain a state of health before the disease itself within you found another pathway of expression, another way of expression, which is what happens with medical treatment. This is, you go, you have a particular symptom, let's say hypertension, they give you a drug for the hypertension. The hypertension is now under control, and then voila, you now are presenting with some type of a joint pain or arthritis or diabetes or something is now developing, because that disharmony still needs some type of pathway of expression. It's like a red light on your dashboard that's trying to come to your consciousness to change your pathway, because eventually just bottling up the disease is a reversal of the direction of cure. You need to have things to move from the inside to the out and so forth. So I came across in the mid-1990s, I had been working with essential oils for about 10 years or so in aromatherapy sense. And I wasn't too satisfied with that as well, because it's even more so now. It's based upon the chemistry of the oils, the outer nature of the oils. Yeah, but I came across two things that I was happened to be studying at the time. And one was anthroposophical medicine. And there was a statement by Rudolf Steiner, who was one of the founders of anthroposophical medicine. And anthroposophical medicine is sort of a combination of conventional allopathic medicine, natural medicine, and spiritual teaching. And he said that spirit is most tangible on this earth, in this finite realm, that spirit, that the essential oil, is what approaches most closely to spirit within this world. In other words, it is one of the central carriers of the soul nature of the plant. And I was also studying Kabbalah at the same time, which is Jewish mysticism. And one of the teachers said that the human soul is comprised of plant, animal, and human soul components. And this is why human beings can relate to plants on a soul-to-soul level. So what Steiner was saying is that plants that are living beings, and they have being. And if anything that has being is ensouled. And the essential oil is particularly rich in this ensoulment. Now, I happened to be studying at that time, or reading what to me is a seminal book for me and for my understanding of things, which was Martin Buber's I Am Thou, the great philosopher, 20th century philosopher, I Am Thou. And he had a specific section in there that really put it all together for me. Just briefly, what I Am Thou, without going into too much of a tangent, he said that the only way you can have spirit in any type of relationship you have is on a soul-to-soul level. If you have this reciprocal interaction between one soul and another soul, and when you do that, then spirit is infused in an in-between space, a meeting space between those two souls. This light of spirit is infused, and you can treat or engage with other souls on an I-it level. In other words, they're just, you're a soul, but you don't care what they are or whether they're ensouled or not, and you don't acknowledge it. You just use and experience that individual, and that's an I-it relationship. Or you can have an I and thou relationship, where you engage with that person's I. In other words, that person's I is a thou in relation to you. And when you are engaging with them, you are figuratively saying the words I-thou to that individual, rather than, you know, you go into a store and can you find this, you know, this widget for me? And that person's not a soul to you, it's just somebody there. But if you engage with them on a human level, you acknowledge them as a soul. Well, it's the same with plants. And he made this descriptive statement in his book. He says that when you're walking along through a rural area, let us say, in the country, and you come to a rose bush, you can engage with that rose bush. Oh, it's a rose bush. It's essential oil. Rose oil will have aldehydes in it, and, you know, sesquiterpene alcohols. So whatever it is in chemistry of the oil, and I can use that for eczema. In other words, you're looking at all what you can use or experience from it. It's just an it to you. Or when you come up to that rose bush, you say to the rose bush within your consciousness, ah, so it is you, so it is thou. So now you're engaging with that oil on that level. So I decided that essential oils, carriers of the soul of the plant, concentrated carriers of the soul of the plant, are all in soul, and you communicate with them on a consciousness level, rather than on a purely thought level that you're trying to use them to take something to them, that they're just nothing different than a chemical would be for a chemist. But that there's something that if you can engage with them on a soul level, then that would open doors to mysteries. They would give you access to their deeper depths, to their deeper mysteries. And within those mysteries, you will understand who each individual oil is. Who is patchouli? Who is eucalyptus? Who is peppermint oil? What are they like? What is their inner nature? What is their true nature? What is their eternal line? What is the DNA that they carry? And then if you do an interview in a classical homeopathic sense of an individual, an anamnesis, and you get to know who is this person, not only physically, what are their symptoms on a physical level, what are their emotional issues, but what have they been through in their life? What are their traumas? What was life like growing up? Who was the mother? Who was the father? How did they engage with them? How did they become who they are? And you match typologies to various components of that case, of that full case, of that full picture as you're developing. In other words, you're doing almost like a paint by numbers. you're using patchouli, the typology patchouli, to match a certain component of this person's soul. The various mosaic tiles that comprise a person's soul. And you're creating this mosaic portrait, this portrait in oils of this individual that mirrors who this true nature is, not just what the eczema is or what the symptoms of their tumor or the psoriasis, but who is this person? And this, that helps explain why psoriasis as opposed to ulcerative colitis. It helps explain that to you. You begin to understand that outer nature by seeing the inner nature, but you're matching the oils to this picture. And you create this portrait, this mirrored image. And for the first time in many, many years since this person embarked on what Hermann Hesse refers to as the great detour, away from the true self into this illusory range of the ideal self, social conditioning, away from being guided by organismic understanding, from, in other words, guiding your life by the feeling and your connection to spirit, helping you make decisions rather than basing decisions on the thoughts and ideas of others through your thought consciousness. Then for the first time in many years, this individual will be able to gaze upon their image in the mirror of the blend. And that sparks something, and it's an unfolding. And in that, and part of that unfolding would be a commitment not only to walking backwards towards the beginning of herself or himself, but also making the changes on that physical level that are necessary to be able to reduce the psychical resistances, the resistances to psychical, deep psychical progress. The body will offer tremendous resistance. There's nothing like disease to keep you from making progress on a deep soul level because you're preoccupied with the pain and the suffering. So there needs to be changes on that level as well. And one of the first things that people do when they're given these customized, personalized blends are they begin to make positive changes in their life on that level as well. So basically, just to review real quickly, you need to engage with the oils on a soul to soul level. You need to be able to understand them as being and having being rather than just being nicely scented chemical entities. And you need to engage with them from your soul, from your deeper level as well, not just from some user level as some type of a mechanic. You have to be something deeper, just a soul to soul relation. And if so, they will guide you. They will begin to guide you. And the interesting thing you will find as a practitioner that with each case you work, if you work the blends this way and work on this level, if you blend this, I assure you, if you blend in the spiritual vital essence level way, you will never want to blend any other way again. It will be so totally unsatisfying to you. It would be like going from a really perfect marriage and then something happens, maybe that person dies, to something far less satisfying to you. You wouldn't be able to do it. You wouldn't be able to tolerate it. Well, this engaging with the oils, you can never go back to just looking at them as being chemicals to work with in some way. But what happens is you begin to understand yourself more. With each case you do, you begin to understand through the lens that you have turned towards this individual. You begin to understand your own true nature, and your own soul begins to make even more progress on its own healing journey. And that becomes part of the equation for you. So I hope that gives you a bit of a background and some understanding of what I do. And so I'll turn this back to you.
Yeah, it's even opening up and moving in this direction with the right heart space starts the journey. I think, you know, that's what you're saying. Like, many would need you to guide them at first to even learn about this at this level. But when we have the right attitude or are wishing to learn, doors will open. So, and I found it interesting. You said we have a resistance to healing. Where do you think that comes from?
There's various resistances to it, but the strongest resistances is that as you go through your life, you construct this whole social context around you. You're married or you have a relationship, you have children, you have a job, whatever all those things are, And all those people are not going to be in the space that you are going to be aiming for. They're used to you being that idealized self. They're used to using and experiencing you. They're used to you as the it, as this outer. Any effort that you make to withdraw from that back to something that's truer to your own feeling, to who you really are, is met with resentment and with resistance. So you may say, well, just have the courage and stand up to it. Well, sure, it's easier said than done. If you're single and you don't have, or you don't have children, or you have some type of a relationship where that person is understanding and supportive, then there's less of that resistance. But if you find yourself in a situation where you don't have any of that, then it becomes very difficult for you. You have to make decisions. I'll give you one of the classic examples, one of the things you run into, that you almost invariably going to have a failed case is when a person is very religious. I have nothing against people being religious. Everybody has to decide for themselves what they want to be or not be in their lives, or how they relate to God and to spirit. That's their choice. But very religious people are generally within a social context. They belong to a community, so to speak. And so very often they have customs and legalisms and customs and so forth that they have to adhere to. And they will find that what they learn when they begin to dig deeper into themselves, when they begin to be illuminated by what Ramana Maharshi said is the most important pathway to spirit, which is self-inquiry, is contradictory to the ropes that tie them into where they are now. And so for a few weeks, they may make some feeble efforts at carving out a more individualized space for themselves, but almost invariably, the ocean swallows that back up again. And it's the case that showed promise for the first few weeks begins to totally disappear. So that's sort of a more exaggerated example. But in most people's lives, there are going to be those circumstances. And unless you're highly self-disciplined, highly motivated, and driven that this is a goal in your life to get back, you begin to understand that this is what is wrong with me. This is why I have anxiety, that it's this schism, this separation from who I am and from spirit that is at the core of this. Unless you accept that as the basic premise and see the value in working back towards that, invest yourself in that, then it's very difficult to maintain a directional process towards wholeness of being. So this type of work, unfortunately, is only for a few people. It's for that small percentage of people who, almost by their archetypal nature, are inclined to make this what Joseph Campbell refers to as the hero's journey. And what we refer to spiritual vitalizing as the solar, S-O-U-L-A-R, hero's journey. This going backward to moving forward towards a realization. And then once you have that realization, converting that realization into actualization, not only for yourself, but in terms of helping others as well, which is part of the whole process of healing.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, it's the most important thing you could do, because you could spend lifetimes trying to get through whatever it is that your soul is trying to teach, or you could focus and get it done, you know, in this lifetime. So I just find it so important.
Often what happens for a lot of people, and the ones who have the most potential, I went to college in the 1960s, which now seems like the 1760s at this point, but in the 1960s, and there was this whole idea of opening yourself to awareness and self-exploration and so forth, and connection to nature, reconnection to nature, return to nature and so forth. And so, but then as the 70s came and as people moved along, there were millions of people like me who saw this and experienced that, life caught up with you and they sort of lost track all of that. And so the yoga and the camping and all the things you did back then, became part of your history rather than part of something that was living, or contemporaneous to you. Those people generally have more potential. They experienced it somewhere along the line, and they realize that they miss it, and that's what they need to get back to. And you are able to help those people who had some prior experience of that connection to spirit. But to everybody who's just sort of out there and never been in there, it sounds good to them on some theoretical level. They make some logical sense, but they don't really connect to it in any serious way.
Right. True. So I also love how you talk about, which I've always pondered, how can we be healed or have an essence of plant, animal, mineral? And just the way you explained that, I found that very aha. That was aha. So, because we're all connected, even to plants, animals, and spirit or in minerals. So it's really fascinating. Can you give us a couple examples maybe of how maybe a patient or a hypothetical of how this essence can mirror someone's true nature, and then it acts like a catalyst toward moving forward?
Well, just in a really general sense, one thing that you lost sight of as you move through life is your true image. When you're a child and you're first out there, you're connected to the world. You even can look at little kids now before, you know, things could start to go astray, because most parents don't feed their children properly. The mother doesn't feed herself properly during pregnancy or during the breastfeeding period. They're already giving children immunizations when they're still in their infancy. Now, I just read recently that there was some approval by the FDA in this country of an mRNA vaccine for pregnant women. So you're now starting to put foreign DNA, RNA fragments into the fetal circulation. So children are now in a much more precarious position than they used to be. But let's talk about the idealized child. When you're first born, you're still connected to nature. You look at a child in the crib and they're looking around and they're seeing things you don't see. They're still in some way still connected to spirit. You can even remember yourself when you're out in a field or in a park when you're a young kid, and a butterfly flying by, or ants walking along the ground, or even the sound of the birds in the trees were all captivating to you. Whereas as an adult, you're not really paying that much attention to anything. Your level of awareness and connection is down. So, but some part of that still, that some residue of that is still with you. That is who you are, and you become more and more distant from that. But at one time, that's who you were. That nature, that image of yourself was with you, and it stays with you, and it's with you all the time, but it's operating in the background. And the idea is, well, how do I find my way to that? What is that? I don't even know what that is anymore. I've become confused. This is one of the blocking influences in life, is this confusion of who am I really? What am I? So the idea with Blend is that you can mirror yourself by creating a mosaic image through this oil will match that archetype as opposed to that archetype. And that's where I should segue into that. One of the most important things you need to do when you look at a symptom picture, when you get the symptom, oh, I have psoriasis, and when I was young, you know, I had scarlet fever, and then I've had, you know, three bouts of pneumonia, and I had, you know, I was born with this, and then I, you know, my father died when I was 11, and then I became anxious, you know, and you have all this, you're getting this collection of all these various symptoms. Is you need to be able to translate those symptoms back into archetypes. What we do in spiritual phytoessencing is we do archetypal blending. We don't blend for the symptom. We use the symptom to help understand what is the archetypal fabric of this individual. So I'll give you an example of archetypes that we use. One is going to be the chakras. Chakras are basic archetypes. So you have seven or eight chakras, according to nine, however you want to look at it. But, you know, the basic model is seven chakras. And some people will be more dominant chakra one and chakra three, and some will be more dominant chakra four and chakra five. You know, everybody's a mix because they're archetypal. They're more dominant this and more dominant that. So by the way, not so much the symptoms that they have, but translating those as being reactions, how they're reacting to certain stimuli in their life, how they're reacting on a physical level, what the nature of the symptoms are, how they reacted to the challenges in their lives, will tell you, well, this person is more chakra 2 and chakra 6 is coming up a lot here and so forth. So for instance, I'll give you a quick example of that. If you ask people, well, you had this terrible thing happen to you, you know, your mother died when you were, you know, just 17 years old and so forth, which chakra do you think was really affected by that? And almost invariably, everybody's going to say the heart chakra. They're going to say chakra 4, the heart chakra, which of course it is affected. But the question is, was it affected directly? Because the heart chakra is going to be collateral damage to any chakra. The heart chakra will be collateral damage. But for a lot of people, it will be that the actual direct hit was on chakra 3, their will, their ability to will, the will to move forward, the will, the ability to make decisions and not stay in the state of decisionlessness. Or it could have been chakra 2, which is the seat of passion, and they've lost their passion. And this affected the heart chakra, or chakra 6. And then now I don't believe in God anymore. So now they're disconnected to chakra 6. So you begin to have to understand, what is the fabric of the chakras? Some things are givens in the archetypes. What is their sun sign? So the sun sign is, let's say the sun sign is Pisces. And what is the moon sign? What is the rising sign? We use only 6 signs in spiritual Pali Western saying, and that is sun, moon, rising, descendant, and the north node and south node of the moon at the time of birth. And in the spiritual vital saint repertory of essential oils, each of those zodiac signs, Aries and Pisces and Libra and all the rest of these, all have a list of oils underneath all of them. So you say, well, okay, her sun sign is Aries and her moon sign is Libra and her rising sign is this and her descendant sign is that, and you get those rubrics and you line them up in a rubric chain on a blank piece of paper, and you see which oils are redundant in all 6 of those rubrics for Aries and Libra and so forth. And you see, well, it came out to about 4 oils out of the, you started with 35 in the Aries rubric, and now you're down to 4 oils that made it through this filtration process and that occurred in all the primary signs for this individual. And so that's are some of the oils that you're getting from that astrological archetypal nature. Then you go to the chakras. Chakra will say, okay, chakra 2, chakra 6. These are the 2 most important archetypes on the chakra level in this case. And you see, well, what oils are in those rubrics? In, you know, the chakra 2 rubric and then the chakra 6 rubric. Then you go to another rubric. Well, which elements? We use 6 elements. I suppose in Chinese medicine, they use 5 elements. In spiritual Pali Western saying, I use 6 elements because I believe the fire element needs to be subdivided into the warmth element and the light element. And so I've created a 6 element system. And you see, well, let's see, their water element is really deeply effective. And then, the wood element is stagnant and impacted. And you take those rubrics. So now you're beginning, and that's just the beginning. There's also the miasmas, which I have adapted from homeopathy and classical homeopathy. They're a cancer miasm type or a zoric miasm, a tubercular miasm. And now you're collecting all these archetypes and you're lining them up in these rubric chains, and you see which oils are occurring redundantly through all these their archetypal nature. Because if we go back to the model of the eye, the eternal eye, in order for this person, this eye, to create a self structure, it has to utilize archetypal components. In other words, those archetypal components would be like the electrons in the orbiting around the nucleus of the eternal eye. And those archetypal components in turn are accumulated from both past lives through miasmatic transference, which is some bioenergetic transference that is not genetically based. And of course, genetic transference as well. And then, of course, early childhood programming to a certain extent becomes constitutional. And so you have this archetypal arrangement. And from those archetypes then becomes the structure of yourself. So when you identify the archetypes, you are now working much closer to the core of being as where those archetypes are arranged, where they are housed at that deepest level of being. So that automatically targets your blend, because now you're working towards that archetypal nature, which is much more deeply seated than to the archetypal image nature. In other words, all the symptoms they will present with are the result of their archetypal structuring. So if they didn't have that archetypal structuring, then they wouldn't present with those particular archetypal images. So if a person has a tendency towards headaches, and those headaches tend to be in response to stress, certain things will trigger it and so forth. Well, that's an image. That particular whole understanding of that symptom is an archetypal image of their internal archetypal structure. You use that image to try to identify the underlying archetype. So it's archetypal blending. The first thing you do is you identify the archetypes. From there, you can begin to collect a collection of oils, or gather a set of potential oils, not the ones that are actually being the blend, but the ones that you have now filtered down to from the 125 or so oils we consider in spiritual phytoessencing, down to maybe a list of 15 or 16. This is what we refer to as the possibles list. And then from there, you go to the chapters in the spiritual phytoessencing, Materia Medica Spiritualis of Essential Oils. Each chapter is 25 to 30 pages long, that presents the typology through its archetypal nature of this oil. And then you match typologies to components, archetypal components in the case, to archetypal, to the picture you see, you match it. And when you do that, it's like painting a portrait in oils. And when that portrait is completed, that person on some consciousness level views it as a mirror. It's mirrored to them on some deeper level, not in a sensory image way of a visual image, but in an image that is perceived by some deeper level of consciousness that is still connected to who this individual has been and has always been.
It takes treating someone as an individual to a whole new level, doesn't it? It's just wonderful, fascinating, exciting.
It is. It takes the problem with it, of course, is that it takes time to learn how to do, and it takes patience. And it's not something that a 15-minute visit to your office is going to be able to do. You know, you need to do an interview. The interview to do just a situational blend. A situational blend is, as opposed to a deep active constitutional blend. A situational blend, you are trying to still tie in to who that person is archetypally. But you're dealing with a situation in this person's life that they're confronted with, a grief episode, a tremendous stress that they're now moving through, a trauma of some sort that you have to cover for that grief. You have to help them through, but you don't want to just cover it as a superficial symptomatic type of remedy. You want to tie it in. You want to get some of their underlying archetypal picture as well to understand how they are reacting to this trauma. In other words, what is their reactional mode? We begin to understand their reactional modes and tie into that. And once you assuage that stage, you help ameliorate that stage, help them work through that stage, then your next step is to go deep. Well, let's look at the life picture now. Let's look at who you've been and who you've always been and where you need to go. And you go deeper there. And so basically that is the sequence at how things are done, and the amount of individuals who are willing to stay there for the training and then be able to devote the time to it rather than to a high volume practice where you can see a lot of people in one day. And, it's limiting. So that's the limiting factor on an ideal level and on a theoretical level and a practical level. I can tell you from many years of practice at this point, that it's really deep acting and it's really wonderful. It's life changing.
Even helping someone with a situation helps them out of that stuck state and then more fluid in order to go toward even deeper healing. So it's just so powerful.
Absolutely. And when you say stuck, people should understand that everything reflects itself. Every level of being reflects itself in the other levels of being. Everything is holographic. in that way. So the Chinese, for instance, will tell you that, you know, in terms of physical disease, stagnation of qi, that qi is movement, life is movement, that a river is a river so long as it is moving, and if it stops for even a moment, it becomes a puddle, and it is no longer something that is going to support an ecosystem anymore. So you need to keep the qi moving, and this is what acupuncture is all about. Well, it's the same thing on the deeper psycho-spiritual level. If there isn't movement, if there isn't evolving, if there isn't unfolding, if there isn't this circuitous path to return back to the beginning of who you are, that movement, but with the greater knowledge that you've acquired on your hero's journey, that you now are, to use Joseph Campbell's terminology, moving into the phase of returning with the elixir, that you've learned, you've had the realization, you've gone through the turmoil life, you've gone through all of that, you've gone through that particular experience and learned through it. It hasn't beaten you down, maybe it has beaten you, but through that beating, you've learned and moved on, and then you can return with that knowledge to help others. That is really the goal, is that return, is you the outward journey and then the return, which in Kabbalah is the most important thing in Kabbalah, that one of the most important things to remember in Kabbalah is the return, is that in the process of creation, that we separated from the finite, we separated from the perfect perfection, the peace, the pure light of spirit. And metaphorically speaking, this was Adam and Eve. They're being expelled from the Garden of Eden, the Garden of Eden symbolically being spirit, being expelled from that separation, that estrangement, that exile, to use Kabbalistic terms, the exile from that you go out into the world to learn to use your own personal will to separate and have the capacity to individually, the opportunity to learn on your own and to appreciate God and spirit without being just a child of God, not having will being part of that. You're given that opportunity. Once you do, you learn what you need to learn. Your soul acquires what it needs to learn. And then there's the return. Then you have to give back. Then you have to not only receive, you need to impart. And in order to be able to do that, you need to not be stuck in the zone where the stresses of life and everybody else's particular problems become obstructions to you being to be able to fulfill your journey. And I know that's asking a lot. Life is complex and life is tough. And everybody has hard blows, and it's tough. But it's a matter, are you determined? Do you want to? Is that part of your will? Or is it part of your karmic cycle that you're ready to be there? And if you are, and there are many millions of people that are, then the only way is to overcome psycho-spiritual stuckness and also just stuckness on a physical level as well.
Mm-hmm. Is it too complicated just to give a slight or small snippet of what the essence of an oil would be, such as peppermint? And then I want you to share how people find more of you, because this is so incredible.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Well, let's take peppermint, since you mentioned peppermint. Peppermint, if you read the chapters, they're built of archetypal models. So I start, let's say in the peppermint chapter, I start with the growing conditions. Where does it grow? What does the plant look like? The plant morphology and so forth. For instance, if something has round leaves, soft, round, you know, say furry type leaves, since the leaves of the plant are the emotion, the emotional, the feeling part of the outreaching part of the plant, then that oil will have a more softer, more outreaching, more feeling type of nature. If on the other hand, the leaves are more lanceolate, in other words, shaped like a spearhead or an arrowhead, having that type, then it tells you just from the doctrine of signatures that this is more towards the animal soul, more toward it has more of that, more aggression in it that would be apply more to the animal soul nature of an individual. So, if a plant grows in a drier place like myrrh, this will tell you something about the drier individual, the person who's dry, not only the physical level, but maybe in a creational level. On a creative level as well, or in a very moist or a humid. This tells you about the plant. Then the folklore. will tell you something about the plan. What was it used for in the past? How was it thought of? How was it considered in spirit? And so forth. What was it used for back then on those deeper spiritual levels when people were much more connected to plants as spiritual beings, as communicators of something from the spirit world, or transferers of that as well? From there, you move to the actual medical, to what was it used with for an herbal medicine, peppermint. As we know, of course, it's used extensively in the GI tract, for the lungs, for the respiratory system, and so forth. How is it used in aromatherapy? How is the essential oils used there? And then you accumulate. For instance, there's a homeopathic remedy that's made from menthol, and which is the main chemical component of peppermint. So you use that symptom picture from menthol. But my determination with peppermint is that it's associated, having worked a lot with homeopathic remedies, has a good relationship, a strong overlap relationship with the homeopathic remedy phosphorus. And peppermint is very rich in phosphorus. And the peppermint individual will resemble very much the constitutional type of the phosphorus individual. And phosphorus means bearer of light. The person is sort of a bearer of light. They do have that light being about them. You can almost see it in their eyes. There's a sparkle in the peppermint type's eyes. And they're very communicative. And communication is very important to them. They're more social. They're more compassionate. They all have that whole thing going on that you have with phosphorus, plus a lot of the symptoms of the peppermint picture, plus some of the folkloric images and so forth. And if you see that in this individual archetypally, and it came up through the repertorizing especially, then you would choose peppermint oil to be one of the component oils in the remedy. We never use one oil individually. We only paint portraits in oils to work with that. Now, being that I'm running short of time here, that if you were to just do this constitutionally, then we'd be good enough to put peppermint oil just based on that constitutional basis. But if you were trying to tie it in to something that's going on contemporaneously, a trauma of some sort, you would be looking at both the peppermint oil picture on a symptom level. Oh, it's good for the nerves. It's calming for the nerves. It's this and that and so forth. It'll help deepen the breath, or it'll help with this particular infectious microorganism and so forth. And it's also, this person also shows evidence that they are a peppermint type archetypally as well. Then you're trying to tie the symptom into the archetype before you put it into the blend. So that's the important thing of tying the symptom picture into the underlying archetypal picture. Now you would do the same thing for any of the other oils that you're dealing with. You would choose that, like for instance, chamomile. I'll make this real brief. Chamomile, if you look at the homeopathic picture of chamomile, which is actually made from chamomile, and you see the symptom picture, you can use that as part of your decision-making process. Is what is the essential oil of chamomile? What is its nature? And if you look at that, one of the things you see about chamomile is that pain is a very important part of the chamomile picture, that there's this sensitivity to pain, this intolerance of pain, this experience of great pain. Pain, pain, pain is in this picture very frequently. So pain is a big part of the picture. And at the same time, we see some of the other aspects, such as the need for sedation. And the chamomile type tends to need a lot of nurturing, trends towards self-centeredness, sees things through the lens of what about of themselves. Magnesium ties into it as well. There's often this feeling of not being nurtured. There's a close connection between magnesium themes and the chamomile. So then if you see some of that in this picture as well, and at the same time, pain is part of the outer symptomatic picture, then you would add that in. And before you know it, you're starting to build various components that can work either situationally or on a deep constitutional level. And that's how it's all done.
Love it. Now, how do people find you? Oh, nope. I have one more question. Once you've done the blend, do you take it internally or do you apply it topically?
It's used both externally and internally. The external aspect is sometimes just as simple as inhaling it from the wrists, a few drops. But being an old-time naturopath, an old-time naturopathy was very tied into hydrotherapy. I use it in foot soaks and hand soaks, in warm soaks called a neutral bath, and other types of applications such as that as well. Externally, we do apply it in dilution to chakras based upon what's going on with them and various other reflex points on the body. Internally, the blend is diluted down in the homeopathic method. It's diluted down sequentially using dilution and succussion. It's brought and made to a 1 to 10,000, 1 to 100,000 dilution, 1 to 1,000,000 dilution. And that's what's taken internally. The 6X dilution, the 12X, whatever, it's taken internally in that very highly dilute form, where when you take 10 drops of what we call the potentized dilution, you're getting just molecules of the blend. And there's no concern about, well, you know, this contains thulone or some other type of component that there's some concern about. It's so dilute that you don't have that. And that is used in concert with the blends used on the more physical external way.
So beautiful. I am so excited. Thank you so much. Now, do tell us how people can find more of you.
Well, my website is naturalhealthscience.com. I also have my natural health science system, which is based upon my naturopathic background and Chinese medicine and homeopathic medicine and so forth, all put together into this natural health science system. I wrote a book on the 12 cell salts. It's the first Materia Medica, created Materia Medica on the 12 cell salts, to be written since 1926. That's now available, and you get a lot of tremendous information in there of how to use cell salts in conjunction with essential oils as well. But it's naturalhealthscience.com, which includes my spiritual phytoessencing work. It's part of that. And we do have a membership program. If you want to be a member, and the classes are run from February through June, and then again from September till the end of November, 2 classes a month. Plus, I write a newsletter for members about once every 2 weeks. And there are blending exercises and all kinds of things that you learn and cosmic light projections. And it's only $99 a year. For all of that, I try to keep the pricing as low as possible to make it as open to anybody who wants to be part of it. Gemstone essences are part of it as well. I have a whole system of gemstone essences. I've prepared at this point 55 different gemstone essences, and you learn about gemstones and how to use those internally as well as essences. So if you'd like to join, just go to naturalhealthscience.com and go to the member zone, and you can join, or you can contact me through the website or my personal email at drbruceb@cnw.com. And I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Great. And we'll put those links in the show notes for sure. Thank you so much, Dr. Bruce. I'm just honored to have you.
And it's been a privilege for me as well. And thank you so much for inviting me and giving me this opportunity. It's much appreciated.
If you've enjoyed the information in this episode, share it with someone you care about and know will benefit. There's one thing for certain. Meltdowns are inevitable. Let's move into mastery together. In the show notes, you'll find my link tree, which has links to many of the most popular platforms. You'll also find links to connect to the featured guest, webpage, and social media. Thanks again for being committed to mastery. Change in this world really starts within each of us.